This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting. And with us to begin our show today is Corey Kendrick Wilson, the superintendent of BREC, one of the real up-and-comers in our community. And before we get to the news of the day regarding the bill from Bodie White, which is now dead on arrival at the Capitol after clearing the Senate by a handsome margin, 28-6 in the Senate, didn't fare as well in the House, and so Bodie White has pulled it after negotiations with Superintendent Wilson. But Corey's been on this job for a couple of years, but he is a New Orleanian, went to McMaine, then Morehouse College, and Harvard Law School. That's high cotton, considered the top law school in the world. And he came to Baton Rouge in 2008. How in the world did you end up in Baton Rouge, Corey Wilson?
Well, I moved back to New Orleans in 2002, shortly after practicing law in Houston for about a year. And then my girlfriend at the time, who was living in Detroit, moved to Baton Rouge in 2006, and we were dating Baton Rouge, New Orleans, long distance, not very long distance, but in 2008, we decided to get married and had to make a decision on Baton Rouge or New Orleans. And so for a variety of reasons, we made the decision to remain here in Baton Rouge in 2008. I've been here ever since.
Well, that's our gain. 13 years for a young man who has quite a background, and as mentioned, Harvard Law is not for people who are not smart. So you must have done pretty well on your tests and must have done very well at Morehouse to get the call from Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Yes, I was afraid to death when I went to Morehouse, afraid of failing, and so I did pretty well in school. Finished as the top accountant in my class, a GPA close to 4.0, and worked as a public accountant for a couple of years before following my dream of going to law school. And I applied to every law school. I applied to Southern, I applied to Tulane, I applied to Texas, and also applied to Harvard because of someone I met in Morehouse had graduated from Harvard and encouraged me to apply. So that's sort of how I ended up at Harvard.
Same alma mater as the 44th American president, Barack Obama. He went to Harvard Law. 877-217-5757 is your number. Talk at talklouisiana.org is our email address. And the story from Will Sintel, which is above the fold in today's Advocate, reads, the sponsor of legislation to split East Baton Rouge Parish parks into three parks and recreation districts dropped his proposal Thursday, saying he wants BREC leaders to address his complaints in the next 12 months. There are two issues there. Let's start with the dropping of it. You had discussions with Bodie White. What prompted him to say not now?
Yes, well, you'll have to get that directly from the senator in terms of what ultimately his motivation for bringing it and dropping it. But based on the discussions we had, he agreed to keep the lines of communication open, implement some things that would help keep the lines of communication open, such as advisory councils and those sort of things. But my thought is I just believe that the community spoke up, reached out to their legislators all across the state, as well as here in East Baton Rouge Parish. And so I just believe the momentum was so much on our side because, you know, he said he'll give me another year, but Senator Barrow made that request in the Senate committee. And so but it was a different game at the House. And so I think the senator maybe didn't have the necessary votes.
He didn't have the votes, and this allows him to save face. But Bodie White is nothing if not tenacious. And if he doesn't get his way, I would suspect that he'll be true to his word. He'll be back next year. So what has to happen next year in the coming year to appease him?
I'm not sure, but it does give us an opportunity to keep the lines of communication open. We certainly, I think everyone is watching Breck as well as the senator, and so we can keep those lines of communication open, get some stuff down in writing that we can actually document in terms of what needs to be addressed, see if we can address those things and see where we are next year. But I do think putting formal processes in place where feedback can be communicated and delivered to Breck, where we can respond formally, is the way to go. And so, you know, oftentimes we have these informal discussions about I don't like this or I don't like that. But, you know, I think we have a process to receive that information and respond to it, and that should put us in a better situation this time next year.
All right. 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Tom on Bluebonnet obviously read the paper yesterday. He said that this move by Senator White to reconfigure Breck stems, if reports are accurate, from a relatively minor dispute. Can you flesh out what got Bodie White all hot and bothered?
Again, I'm only speculating based on not sort of circumstantial evidence, for lack of a better term, but we had discussions even last year regarding programming at the park, scheduling who plays. We currently have an agreement in place that specifically tasks Breck with programming, scheduling who plays. But the senator, to his credit, had given me a heads up that we needed more than one organization playing there the entire summer, which UTSSA plays there quite a bit. And so we did not allow UTSSA to schedule the entire summer. The senator approached me later on, was interested in another organization playing. We welcomed that. He requested a certain number of dates. We went back and looked at the schedule. UTSSA had requested all of the dates that the senator requested, but in deference to the senator, we contacted UTSSA and scheduled 6 of the 8 dates, which, again, I thought we were doing something pretty good by doing that. But it was received. You know, I think the senator was expecting to receive all 8. And, you know, we certainly could have had that conversation if that was his expectation, just like we had yesterday morning and the night before. But that did not take place. And so I think I understand his expectations a little better, and we'll keep those lines of communication open going forward.
How many people does Breck serve as far as the number of facilities you have and the number of people who use them?
Yeah, so we serve the 440,000 people here in the parish, but have well over 1 million people who use our parks and facilities. Over 180 parks, 6 golf courses, a zoo, water park, an observatory, horse activity center, Blue Bonnet Swamp, many other great amenities here in the parish. Being a consolidated parish-wide organization allows us to provide those sort of specialty facilities. And so close to 200,000 visitors at the zoo each year, probably 40 or 50,000 attending Liberty Lagoon. I can't recall the golf round numbers right now, but well over 1 million participants that use our system.
The zoo, which sometimes gets criticized, and probably not for particularly good reasons. If they get over 200,000 visitors, that means you're getting about 1,000 a day for all the days it's open, and that's a substantial number of people.
Absolutely. We've seen the zoo attendance rise pretty much every year since 2018. And just going back to 2018, the zoo and the discussion on the location of the zoo divided our community, for lack of a better term. And during my interview process in December of 18, I talked about the power of parks being able to bring people together. And I think we saw that yesterday, and we look forward to doing more of that. But we're excited about what's going on at the zoo. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, we're looking at $40 million of improvements in that area for the park and the zoo. New giraffe eating exhibit, underwater hippo viewing. It's gonna be pretty wonderful. But attendance continues to rise, and that's because of the great customer service at the zoo from the staff. You know, we don't even have new facilities, and people are still coming. So just imagine when we finish the improvements.
We'll spend a few more minutes with Corey Wilson, who is here declaring victory, kind of, in the battle to keep Breck whole. And we'll talk more with him about Breck and some questions about golf and Breck when we return after this 90-second pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Corey Kendrick Wilson, superintendent of Baton Rouge Parks and Recreation. Over a million people a year take advantage of the Breck system in our city, in our parish, and this bill that would have split Breck up has been killed for this session, and Corey is here to talk about that. If you so choose, you can call 877-217-5757 or talk at talklouisiana.org. But independent of that, some people, of course, recognize Breck's services all over our city. You mentioned six golf courses. Which one, asks Tracy at the Capitol, does better than the others as far as actual participants?
Santa Maria is our most successful golf course. Santa Maria is one of two Breck facilities that actually pays for itself, with Liberty Lagoon being the other. Beaver Creek would be next in line, and Beaver Creek is getting close to what we call 100% cost recovery in terms of covering its costs. And then you have Webb, City Park, J.S. Clark, and Dumas, which we're in the process of repurposing.
A City Park, that's one that over time, and you've been here since 2008, I'm sure you know, some people would like to just tear it down and do something else. It's a block away from where I live. Some of us like it the way it is. What's the future of City Park?
Yes, so Jim, in 2014, we brought in the National Golf Foundation to not only look at our inventory of golf, but look at the entire inventory of golf here in Baton Rouge or in the parish. And as a result of that study by the National Golf Foundation, it was a recommendation. At that time, we had seven golf courses. And so the recommendation was to repurpose Howe, which we've done, and Dumas was the next recommendation, or J.S. Clark, actually. And so we are improving J.S. Clark, repurposing Dumas, and have no plans of making any changes at City Park currently. Now, as you read, my background is accounting and law and business. So my perspective is that we're always open and willing and listening and reviewing information. So I do reserve the opportunity with additional information to make a different decision on that.
That park, the golf course, has been around since 1928, I believe. Tom Bendelow, who at that time was a famous designer, has the course under his portfolio. The man's long gone, but he was a big guy at the time. And for those who heard my story, February 10th, I was robbed at gunpoint, a gun about a foot away from my head in City Park as I was taking a nightly walk. That guy's been caught. So you're going to have outliers like this. I know of no widespread crime epidemic in City Park. So if you're afraid of that guy coming back, he's in jail now, so don't worry about it. Zach in Shenandoah. Zach, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Good morning, guys. It's a great Friday. Congratulations to Corey and to Baton Rouge for standing up for this important issue. It sounds like to me that Mr. White was angry because Corey refused his request to get to honor all of his invitations. So I think it's important we understand this is all about power for him, not about the parks, that he wants to control what happens in those parks. I grew up in South Baton Rouge, and those parks were not taken care of as well as they should be, as they are being taken care of right now. So I applaud Corey for what he's doing, and I'm telling him, you know, he has my support for sure for all the parks. I think Breck Park is a great institution.
Thank you, Zach. Corey, anything you want to add to what Zach just said? He's a friendly voice.
Yeah, no, we appreciate the support, and one of the things through this two-month ordeal that has been good is that we have received tremendous support from across the parish, from people such as Zach, and all across the parish expressing their support for Breck. I would like to add that the senator has provided capital outlay to Breck in excess of $2 million. And while most of it has gone to Central Sports Park, it's probably more than any other senator has directed towards Breck. And so we appreciate the senator's efforts. We think he is passionate and sincere in wanting to see improvements in parks in his community. I don't think there was any ulterior motive. I do believe he does believe he has a certain level of authority, which he does. And so we just think he sort of went about it the wrong way. But I just want to acknowledge some of the things that the senator has done, not only for Breck, but for the entire parish.
And in my dealings with Bodie White, he's always been a gentleman. Has he been okay with you?
Absolutely. He's shown me nothing but respect. There's been no cursing or finger waving or anything like that. All of our discussions have been professional and respectful and gentlemanlike. So I don't have any bad words to say about the senator.
877-217-5757. There is still time to get in. Mitchell in Sherwood. Mitchell, you're on with Corey. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Corey and Inkster. I just want to say, Mr. Curry, just keep your head up and do your job. People are going to come at you to try to destroy Breck because you're doing a good job, and we all love you out here. I wanted to ask you one thing. What's up with Glen Oaks Park?
The park. All right, Glen Oaks Park.
Okay, we have several parks in Glen Oaks. One Fortune Addition that we just did some great improvements on, walking trail, new playground. Always enjoy seeing the kids play on that. We have Cadillac Street Park, which is in the Glen Oaks, Zion Hill area, that we're scheduled to do some improvements on. Those are the main two I think about when I think about Glen Oaks. So we certainly have some improvements coming to Cadillac and just recently completed some improvements at Fortune Addition.
Ken in White Oak. Ken, you're on with Corey.
Yes, I was interested in the gentleman's explaining the legal basis of Senator White's challenge. I always understood that Breck was a part of the parish of East Baton Rouge. By what authorization within state law would the state legislature have the authority to do what they were trying to do?
So it's 75 years ago, actually, 1946, Breck was created by a legislative act. Forgive me for not knowing that number off the top of my head, but because we were created by the legislator in terms of creating us a special district with the ability to levy our own taxes and you know, have our own sort of superintendent, no responsibility to the parish government, that is why the legislator are able to intervene because they created us. Now, we're also part of a plan of government as well because there was, before 1946, a park and recreation agency which was part of the plan of government. So the plan of government does recognize us. And that was one of the challenges we were going to say is that because we are part of the plan of government, that cannot be changed without a vote of the people. And so that was one of the arguments we were scheduled to make on yesterday In addition to just taking property from one organization, giving it to another without just compensation, we thought was unconstitutional as well. So there were a variety of legal challenges we were prepared to present.
Bill Huey writes about House Bill 646, filed by Ted James, providing a more process of review and oversight from the Breck commissioners. Is that a good bill?
Yes, actually, House Bill 646, sponsored by Senate, Representative Ted James, was done on behalf of Breck. Legislative Act allows us to... Okay.
You got a few seconds.
Okay. And so, but that allows us to do more at Memorial. We have some big news coming at for Memorial here in the next 30 to 60 days.
We'll have a few more minutes with Corey Wilson, and then it's Tyler Bridges, Pulitzer Prize winner, after the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle producing. In just a moment, we're going to hear from Pulitzer Prize winner Tyler Bridges, who followed Charles Elson, Buddy Romer, through the years, from the governor's mansion to life beyond that, in which the former governor became a successful business person, even though his political endeavors never materialized to the point he wanted. He left quite a legacy in just one term as governor of Louisiana, and Tyler has written about that prolifically and quite well in The Advocate over the last few days, and he was at the services in Baton Rouge a few days ago, and yesterday in Shreveport. The final goodbye was said to Louisiana's 52nd governor. But before we go there, we've had several people waiting to talk to Corey Wilson, and we'll take one more caller and hopefully have Corey back very soon, head of Baton Rouge Recreation and Park System. Rob on Perkins, you get the nod. You're on with Corey. Good morning, Rob.
Thank you. Good morning, Jim. Just one quick question. Any chance the Baton Rouge Gallery can get some signage on Perkins Road?
Baton Rouge Gallery signage on Perkins Road.
Yes, we'll look at into that. Actually, we just completed a system-wide signage package, and with that, we had some consultants walk all through City Park and give us many recommendations on where we need signage. I would imagine Perkins was one of those locations. So, yes, look forward to some great new signage all throughout City Park, including directions how to get to the Baton Rouge Gallery.
Thank you, Superintendent Corey Wilson.
Thank
you. Soon. Pleasure.
I appreciate it.
Tyler Bridges, twice a member of the Pulitzer Prize winning teams based in Louisiana, often in New Orleans, but most recently in the last several years, he's been the capital ace for the Baton Rouge Advocate, New Orleans Picayune. He's a graduate of Stanford University, was also a Nieman Fellow at Harvard, and awarded Columbia University's Maria Moores Cabot Award in 2010 for 10 years of foreign reporting in South America. Well, he is right here in our midst, and he's been following activities at the Capitol. We'll get a brief take on that with him. But he also followed the trail of one of the most fascinating characters in Louisiana political lore, Buddy Romer. And if not for Edwin Edwards, Buddy Romer would probably be remembered as one of Louisiana's most colorful, if not the all-time king as far as color. He was a guy who had many dimensions, which made him a fascinating person, whether you liked him or loathed him. Most people liked him, but nonetheless, he couldn't get enough votes to beat Edwin Edwards and David Duke in 1991, and he never won another election after 1987. But Tyler, you talked with him, and one thing that I think can be said, other than a few exceptions, Buddy Romer never held a grudge of any great dimension like most politicians. He moved on, and he was, at heart, a gentle soul who liked people. He just was a complex man. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I must admit, Jim, I was quite fond of Buddy Romer. First got to know him after I moved to Louisiana in 1989 and began covering him when he was governor. I wrote some stories he didn't like. He kind of... you called him a gentle soul. I don't know if I view Buddy as a gentle soul, but he jousted with me then, and I covered the 91 race that you mentioned. Remember, he'd switched to the Republican Party. Interesting, as you mentioned, he didn't win a race after 1987, and he never did win a race as a Republican. And then there was that 95 race when he tried to get back the governorship. It was led much of the race, but faded at the end. And as you mentioned earlier, he had a really successful career after being out of office. And, you know, he started two banks. He made a lot of money, although money didn't really seem to motivate him in terms of material goods. But he actually may have had a bigger impact with the two banks that he started and all the jobs and investment that have resulted, maybe even than what he did as during his 4 years as governor.
He did. He was a successful business person, and his son Chaz has gone forward, as is his nephew Jude Melville, who runs a Business First Bank. But most people know him as governor of Louisiana, and that he was from 1988 to 1992. And after he was elected, he became a Republican. And I recall doing a show many years ago. This would have been 1996 with Gus Weil, and Romer had just lost his attempted comeback in 95, and Weil was on the air, Gus, and said Romer was a suspect conservative, and the people did not buy into his hard right approach in 95, and Buddy Romer heard it, and he cornered me, and I thought he was going to be angry. He said he saw right through me. his politics were all over the map, Tyler. He ran as a reformer in 91. He ran as a Democrat, and then in 87, and then in 91, he ran as a Republican after he had vetoed two abortion bills, anti-abortion bills. And then in 95, he tried to get farthest right on the spectrum, and it didn't work. What are your thoughts about some of the moves he made that probably were not the most productive for his political overtures?
Yeah, I think the first thing to say about Buddy Romer was that he didn't really fit well in either political party. Tip O'Neill said about Buddy when he was in Congress as a Democrat, often wrong, but never in doubt. And then, as we've discussed, Buddy became a Republican in 91. I think ultimately what he was trying to do there was to position himself to run for president in 1996 after what he expected a second term would end. And he did make that turn to the right in 1995. And as he told you privately and told me privately, that really didn't fit him well, and it was a mistake, I think, on his part. You know, there's always a mixture of politicians, of ideals and ambition, and certainly Buddy had no shortage of ideals, but we shouldn't forget that he was a man who also had ambitions and was willing at times to try to fit his ideals to win office.
A listener notes that the 95 campaign, in which he finished fourth, albeit a close fourth, his manager was one John Neely Kennedy, who had been at his side as a legal eagle when Romer was in his first term. Kennedy ran for attorney general in 91 and got beat by Richard Ayoub and Benny Baggert. And then 95, Kennedy shows up and runs Romer's campaign, and I remember his brother George, who is a political consultant, when he was asked about it, he said, "You don't hire a products liability lawyer to build a house. You hire a carpenter." He said his brother was a very poor leader of the 95 campaign. But John Kennedy, he was at the service on Tuesday, was he not?
Yeah, I did see Senator Kennedy, and I had spoken to him a couple of days earlier. Yeah, he was very, very close with Buddy Romer and got his start in politics, as you mentioned, as a legal counsel to Romer. And I think Senator Kennedy also delivered some words in the Senate in Washington as a tribute to his former mentor.
The story that you wrote had a quote from Kennedy that I found remarkable when Romer was trying to round up votes for his plan to consolidate the boards of higher education, which might have been a good thing. He fell one vote short in the Senate, and he refused to deal with a senator who wanted some kind of project in his district in exchange for the vote. And Kennedy, this is John Kennedy talking about himself, he told the governor, just lie to him. I was amazed Senator Kennedy would be that forthcoming. Tyler Bridges.
Yeah, he told me the story on Tuesday before the funeral for Buddy Romer, and yeah, well, he told me the story, and it seemed like it was an interesting story to put in the new story that I wrote about Buddy Romer.
877-217-5757. We've got a bit more time with Tyler Bridges. When did you first meet Buddy Romer?
Actually, I was remembering that it was a press conference in 1990, and I was sort of struck when I first showed up to the press conference that he was joking around with the reporters before the event began, and that was that I learned because I went to a lot of press conferences with Buddy Romer that he liked to joke with reporters. He liked to tease them, and they would sometimes tease him back. There was not a sort of a formality as sometimes you see with some elected officials, but I just always found Buddy to be a really a guy that I always really enjoyed spending time with. Again, all at times I would write something he didn't like, and he would challenge me on that. But it never sort of there was never a personal animosity coming up from him in that area.
Well, he was a good man, a complex man, but a good man, and he joked about things that were sad in his life. He once told me, for example, that I mentioned this once before, but he said both of his wives were born on October 18th, as was Lee Harvey Oswald, who killed his hero, John Kennedy, as was Raymond Strother, his political consultant, as was Paul Hardy, his lieutenant governor. He was a man who had he had a fertile mind, didn't he?
Yeah, he really was quick, and boy, he could read books. So many people would run into him over the years in Baton Rouge at Books A Million or Barnes & Noble, and just a voracious reader. But as I wrote in one story way back in 1991 when he was that he had taken a book to a Saints playoff game. So he obviously carried that a little too far at times, and I was told that he even took a book to a Rolling Stones concert at the Superdome once, too.
And he would bring them to church as well. At First United Methodist, there's Chris Andrews, who's down there giving a great homily, and Buddy Romer's reading a book. That was Buddy.
Yeah, Buddy was a quirky guy, but speaking of books, you know, I helped him with produce his own book. It's a memoir called Scopina, and I recommend it to people who care about Louisiana politics, but also just understanding Louisiana. It's just a terrific story, but ultimately it's a terrific story by Buddy about growing up at this massive cotton and corn farm in northwest Louisiana. And ultimately it's an homage to his parents who were.
We're going to spend a few more minutes with Tyler Bridges right after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Tyler Bridges, Pulitzer Prize winner, who writes for The Advocate and has written very well about the life and legacy of Charles E. Buddy Romer III, 52nd Louisiana governor, who died at the age of 77 after fighting diabetes since he was 29 years old. That's type 1 diabetes. And at the end, it took Buddy Romer out, but he fought it with great vigor, as he did many other things in life. 877-217-5757. Stuart downtown. Stuart, you are on with Tyler.
Hi, thanks a million, Jim. Tyler in the audience, good morning as always. Tyler, would you consider your books, no slight with this question, as exciting as The Louisiana Hayride and Just Taken Orders? I'd like to hear your comment.
All right. I bet you know.
I'm not sure what to say. It's hard to judge those sorts of things.
Did you read Just Taking Orders?
The Rise and Fall of David Duke. I also wrote Bad Bet on the Bayou, The Rise of Gambling in Louisiana, The Fall of Governor Edwin Edwards. And Buddy Romer plays a role in both of those books. And I was mentioning before the last break, his own book, Scopina, which I helped him with the early editing, was just a terrific read. So I'd encourage people to pick up that.
Tyler's written some exceptional work. He is also the definitive writer about David Duke. When Duke sees Tyler, he usually wants to run, or he once told me he wanted to punch you. but he never.
Well, he doesn't think too highly of you, too, either, Jim.
Well, that's okay. That's okay. But he is a fascinating fellow, and I don't know if we'll ever have another race like that with three people as electric And that's not necessarily a good or bad term, but they were Edwin Edwards, David Duke, and Buddy Romer. But Buddy Romer had a number of interests, including baseball. He was a big Yankees fan, and his daughter Caroline told me, Tyler, that he was buried. It was a closed casket, but Yankees jersey, number one, Romer. That's an appropriate way for him to leave the world.
Well, and I think if I remember the story that he told me many years ago, he once caught a foul ball from Thurman Munson, a Yankees catcher. Don't know what happened to that ball, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was buried with him as well.
Well, he will be remembered and missed, and his wife, Scarlett, was quite a lady, too, and he picked a good companion, a nurse, to spend his final years. She took good care of him, and I'm sure he lived many more years than he would have had she not been in his life. A couple of matters legislatively, Tyler, that listeners wanted me to ask you about, and I know you've been at the Capitol. This ban of transgender athletes from girls' sports has been okayed. It goes to the governor's desk. The governor says he's going to veto it. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it was interesting. I was sitting in the House chamber when it was approved yesterday, and a number of members stood up and applauded, and opponents of the bill were very upset. I've seen some comments on Twitter about that. It wasn't clear to me how much was it that they were applauding the passage of the bill and how much of that had to do with the state representative, Lori Schlegel, who was a brand-new legislator, was presenting her first bill, and they were applauding that. But it certainly, that applause did prompt some strong reaction.
And the sales tax increase could be permanent. This amendment, as Louisiana legislative maneuvers go, is not anything out of the ordinary, believe it or not. Tacked on to a medical marijuana bill. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think Buddy Romer would say that that bill should have gone through the normal process and held hearings and had allowed the public to comment on it. Instead, it all of a sudden kind of just appeared out of the blue. And so we'll see what happens in the final days.
And let's close with Buddy Romer in 1991. Yeah, it was 1990, a bill at the close of the legislative session on the final day, which would have reduced the penalty for beating up a flag burner to $25 for a battery, was changed to an anti-abortion bill that passed the legislature. Yes, that's right, a flag-burning bill changed to an abortion bill. And Buddy Romer was appalled as lawmakers did this, but they did it anyway.
Yeah, you can. Louisiana legislators are very clever people, and so you have to really keep your eye on what they're doing, and they'll pull a rabbit out of a hat, and you got to be ready for that.
And Tyler, lastly, you've got a big project in the offing. Next year will be 40 years since one of the most memorable plays in college football history happened, and it's something very personal for Tyler, who went to Stanford. As Cal beat Stanford when the clock struck midnight in that game, as the band was on the field, and California just kept lateraling and ultimately scored a touchdown. And I don't know if there's ever been anything like it, but you've gotten a book out of it.
Well, I'm in the midst of working on it. It's what I spend my weekends on. It's a book about the craziest finish ever to a college football game, which was in 1982. As you mentioned, Cal and Stanford, it was John Elway's final college football game, and he led Stanford to an unbelievable last-minute field goal to win the game, except Elway called timeout with 4 seconds too early, and so that led to the final kickoff. And also, if I could put up another plug in, I got a book coming out this fall, Jim, called The Flight, A Father's War, A Son's Search. It's about my dad during World War II.
Well, we look forward to reading it and talking with you right here. Thank you, Tyler. Glad you're in the game and continuing to do exceptional work. Tyler Bridges, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We're joined now by Ed Bush. He is director of the Capital West Chapter of the American Red Cross. The Cap West Chapter serves the Capital area to Acadiana and across southwest Louisiana. He took the helm in August of last year, oversaw the response to Hurricane Laura and recent floods, and we are at the brink of another hurricane season. This one is expected to be a busy one, 20 named storms expected. And as many as five may be Category 3 or above. So we need to be ready, and the Red Cross always is at the ready. But as we know, there's only so much that can be done at these times, and people need to do things to help themselves. And, Ed, good morning to you, sir.
Hey, Jim, good morning. Appreciate you having me on the show this
morning. Well, tell us what we can do to prepare in the event of a calamity or a catastrophe that may very well come this way.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was listening to your last caller, and I remember that Cal versus Stanford game. And I was sitting here trying to think of how can I segue off of that? And I guess the best that I came up with was, Let's not count on that last minute play, that last second play in hurricane season, because as magnificent as that play was, it's not going to come around very often. So I guess my segue would be let's practice some preparedness and folks getting informed and having a plan, as opposed to hoping that we're going to have 50 laterals and make it safe through hurricane season.
Well, you say we should all have a personal evacuation plan. So for some of us, that's different than others. But how do we do this?
Yeah, I mean, every plan is going to be unique to the needs of that family and the dynamics of that family. Introduce, you know, some parents who might be living with you, some young children, some pets, and everybody's plan is different. So everybody needs to have that evacuation plan that works for them. And there needs to be contingents to that. You may get separated from people. You may not be able to make it to your uncle's house to pick him up. You may not be able to make it to the store. So yeah, your plan needs to have all those things. So you need a kit to go along with the plan, and the kit might be some water and some food and your flashlights and your batteries and all those kind of things. That look, if we just got to go, you put it in your vehicle or you pack it up and you go, and you don't count on being able to go and buy stuff and a can of gas to make sure your car's full, mm-hmm. all of those kind of things. It's really a logistical exercise at that point and just taking some time to think it through, you know?
Well, most people, they've got a pretty good impression of what should be in an emergency kit. We see this when the stores get bombarded at hurricane time, water, flashlights, batteries, medications. But you say also copies of important papers, and here's something to think about. Cash. Why should we keep cash around during a killer hurricane?
Yeah, you just can't expect that those systems and those things that you normally use to get you what you need are going to be up and running. You know, you may not be able to make it to the ATM, or you may not be able to cash a check. So yeah, again, you need to be able to be self-sufficient, you know, for a few days and have what you need to get through, you know, that first period of just craziness where everybody's, you know, in a bit of a scramble to get out. And the more planned out and the more you've just got everything you need right there on you, the better off you'll be.
What about flood insurance? Obviously, people should have homeowners insurance, even if they own their home. But should they also have flood insurance, even if they are not in a so-called flood zone?
I can't imagine that's not good advice for any and all of all of us. I know, again, that comes in various shapes and sizes, and people have different needs and different resources. But if there's one thing that we've learned in Louisiana, it's that flood area mm-hmm. that flooded yesterday, that may not be where it floods tomorrow. In the last 10 years or so, we've seen a lot of areas that typically don't flood that actually do flood. So certainly folks need to look at their insurance needs and make sure that they're covered.
Well, Ed Bush is not only executive director of the Capital West chapter of the American Red Cross. He was a colonel in the National Guard, retired after a 30-year military career. And I hope you'll be with us again very soon. We've got many things we'd like to talk with you about. You're a dynamic man, and we look forward to hearing about other endeavors that the American Red Cross is active in. Congratulations on your new post, Colonel Bush, and let's keep talking. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services until Monday. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned.